This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius, John Batchelor. Germanicus is here. We have our cups of wine. We're by the Thames. It's springtime, early spring in Londinium. I've been conversing all week with a cobbler. The cobbler is a former centurion. He retired, and he makes shoes now, beautiful shoes. And we were talking about the bad old days, fighting the Brigantes in the earlier years before they settled down. We haven't built Hadrian's Wall yet. That's in the future. But we do have a string of forts to watch the Brigantes. This is the north, the Pennines, if you know the United Kingdom. And he was commenting about the security that we have because we have the Ninth Legion here. And we also bring in, it's called auxiliaries of the empire. For example, in the north, we don't have Romans running the fort systems. We have Batavians who troubled us once upon a time. We conquered them, we Romans, and then convinced them that there was a good life for them if they served in the Roman army in Britain. So we moved them to Britain, knowing that they would be good soldiers because their folks are back home in Batavia. And that's not going to go well for them if they desert or fight badly against the Brigantes. So we were having a good laugh about how well the empire works. And I enjoyed myself thinking, now why doesn't the 21st century work as practically as we do here in the Roman Empire? So Germanicus, I've just given a lesson as to how our genius, Augustus, created a system where we leverage the conquered. We don't enslave everybody. We turn some of them into our soldiers along the frontier. Then we found market towns like Londinium and Colchester, and we build our temples. We build our games. We have a forum. We start market technology, and we prosper. That's how we work here in the first century. The Americans tried it, and now they've run into some difficulty. They're not solving the European wars, which they fought twice in the 20th century, thinking they were over forever. Well, they're back. And you've been watching very carefully how the Americans are fighting the Ukraine war these last years. The Ukraine war is going very badly for the Americans. This week, there was a Financial Times headline, something we would never permit in the first century of Rome. The headline said that Ukraine needs 500,000 recruits. Rome would never, ever need 500,000 recruits when we have all these auxiliaries running around who work for us for cheap. However, the Americans need the Ukrainians to say they need 500,000 troops. The puzzle here, recruits, the puzzle here is they don't have it. So is this a recognition by the Americans that the game is over? Is this a recognition by the Americans that they've got to up their game? How do you read that 500,000? Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. This is a moment of long-delayed recognition for American leadership and their so-called strategic bench, if you might. And their strategic bench, which we all thought was so deep, because after all, that deep strategic bench had defeated the Axis in World War II, and before that, German militarism, and then had, after a long Cold War, defeated the Soviet Union. And then in a high flamboyant cinematic battles, effortless battles against the Iraqis in 1991 and then again in 2003, the U.S. was triumphant. We were the gods of war. And when we chose to pursue an aggressive strategy, somewhere after, I would say, about 2008, with the so-called color revolution in Ukraine, and then culminating initially in 2014 with the Maidan uprising and the coup that overthrew Yanukovych, then the Cold War, and then the Russian invasion, which we essentially precipitated by continuing to arm Ukraine and to refuse to fulfill the terms of the Minsk agreements. And as a result, we have gotten ourselves into a proxy war with a poor client. And Rome had this problem. Rome had this problem for centuries with Armenia. Armenia was always double dealing between Rome and Persia. You could never trust the Armenians. You could never conquer them, but you could never know when they'd turn around and head toward the Persian Shah. And the result was a continual headache over several centuries for us. However, Rome never made the mistake of initiating a proxy war in which the proxy would have little chance of success, and at the same time pull Rome into a war that it couldn't win. And this is exactly what the United States has done in Ukraine. We've created a war with Russia that has entailed the not slow, I mean, 24 months isn't slow, but has entailed the relatively rapid destruction of Ukraine as a viable society. The reason Ukraine needs 500,000 men is simple. They've run out of men that can fight. And their losses are staggering. The irrecoverable losses, which is the old Soviet term, men who can never return to the battle, men who are dead, are about at 1 million, which is an enormous number. And adding to that, there's 850,000 men of military age who wisely, perhaps, fled Ukraine and are now residing elsewhere, mostly in Western Europe. So what should the U.S. do to provide them another 500,000 cannon fodder? Should Europe impress them, arrest them, and force them back into Ukraine, where they will all be sent to the slaughter? Ukraine at this point requires 30,000 men a month. Now you do the arithmetic, it's not hard. That's about 1,000 a day in irrecoverable casualties. They need 30,000 a month. Right now, they can get maybe 10,000 a month. The Ukrainian army, which is supposed to be at a level of about, say, 800,000, according to what they've said, is nowhere near at that level. It's a much smaller army, and it's too small to stand up to a Russian force that continues to receive about 30,000 new volunteers a month.
The DCI added this week, nobody asked him, but he added it, that unless and until Ukraine gets, and he meant ammunition, but it would include the 500,000, the Russians are going to make large advances. He got out front on that. You know how information works. You get out front so when it happens, you can say, we covered that and move on. He said the Russians are going to make large advances unless. The unless will not happen. There will not be 500,000 recruits, and the U.S. will not rearm. Please continue, Germanicus.
This is all quick preparation for what is to come. And the U.S. is going, you know, you reap what you sow, as the great biblical-sounding cliche goes. And the truth is that the U.S. and NATO as a whole lustily embraced this proxy war, assuming that victory was in sight, victory was at hand. And the truth is there was never any realistic possibility of Ukraine defeating Russia in battle and retaking lost territories. And what has happened was absolutely foreseeable the moment the war began, and yet somehow Western strategic analysis failed. It failed not just among the fools, the unread, and the ignorant among, say, the press, the so-called journalistic media, the mainstream media. It also failed among those who should know, who went to war colleges, where I once taught, who should know at least a little bit about how to do strategic analysis. And yet they rushed to embrace a vision of conflict that was never going to happen. And indeed, it never did. There were a couple moments that were inflated into Ukrainian victories, which in fact were not victories. And the entire war has been one long attrition of Ukrainian society, emptying it out, letting it bleed out slowly, although, as I said, 24 months isn't that slow. And what we're going to see inevitably, because there are no shells left and there are no people left, inevitably there will be a coming apart in Ukraine in the coming months as soon as the ground firms up later in the spring. The Ukraine has played out. The Russians have become very good at what they do.
I want to be a little difficult for a couple of minutes. There have been drone attacks against refineries in Russia, deep into Russia. They've interrupted production for a night or a day or however fast it takes to fix it. However, it's important to note that Russia is short of refined products. A couple of weeks ago, it refused to export any more refined products. At least it was declared we will no longer do it. The black market there works the way it does everywhere else. You can get what you can pay for. In any event, Ukraine is showing some aptitude of turning to what you could be called terrorism or harassment or guerrilla warfare, the way the French and the Polish conducted themselves when they were in sought refuge in Great Britain in the 1940s. That is a way of sustaining the war. Do you agree that the CIA or the authorities in the U.S. and their sister organizations in Brussels are capable of going to that plan to drag this out for several years? We have a couple of minutes before. I don't want to get involved in NATO. We're going to come to NATO next.
No. The U.S. is deeply engaged in exactly that kind of misdirection. American leaders, if you want to call them that, came to the understanding some time ago that not only was Ukraine not going to win, but it could lose in a very shameful, humiliating way. And so the U.S. came up with something comparable to, say, Hitler's V2 program or the buzz bombs or any of those revenge weapons that the Germans created later in the war, whose sole effect was, as you put it, terrorism. And yet those weapons hardly shook the British. In fact, they created tighter and tighter bonds, reminded the British, whose morale might have been flagging later in the war, that no, they had to see it through. And I think this is the effect of hitting targets in Russia. You know, the Ukrainians launched drones against Belgorod, killed a little girl. I mean, that's not going to help them, and it's certainly going to increase Russian determination to win. And the entire campaign that NATO created, mostly with American and British technology to go after the Russian fleet in the Black Sea, had no impact on the course of the central campaign, but it did look good.
And you do agree it can go on for quite some time without the Ukrainians having a GPS. They can move around.
Yeah, it can go on for a long time, but it can't go on in the face of a Ukrainian central front collapse. So this is all to buy time. It's to keep up morale in, I guess, Ukraine and NATO. So it still looks as though there are remote possibilities, but this is a loser proposition in the sense that the terror dimension of these strikes will become more and more obvious and more predominant and give Russia at the same time more and more propaganda capital.
All right, let's go to NATO because we keep talking about NATO. Well, let's address it directly. Kyiv right now has told us they don't have enough to continue the war. So does NATO have enough to continue the war? I'm speaking to Germanicus. We're in Londinium. It's springtime. And we're talking about the troubles of the 21st century because it's not obvious that they can be solved without a major war. And that would be NATO. NATO Next. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.